Welcome to the Good Glow podcast with Ryan Holiday. This season of the Good Glow is brought to you with thanks to Dove's new Advanced Care Body Wash. So this week we started their September reset and I've been leaning into a little bit more self-care. So I thought, okay, for this week, I'm going to try the Pampering Advanced Care Body Wash. And let me tell you, this is TLC in a bottle. It smells so good and left my skin feeling so, so soft. So unlike ordinary body washes, it's made with 24-hour renewing micro moisture, and this is groundbreaking new technology from Dove that deposits millions of tiny but powerfully moisturizing droplets that, instead of getting washed off in the shower, they absorb deeply and continuously work with your skin's natural renewal process to strengthen your skin's barrier and help retain and boost moisture. So why not try Dove's new Advanced Care Body Wash, available now nationwide. Oh, so Ryan Holiday on the Good Glow. I'm so excited for you to hear this 30 minutes of what feels like really good life coaching. So Ryan started out as the director of marketing for American Apparel. He went on to create his Instagram page, Daily Stoic, 3 million followers. He's written loads of books, including The Obstacle is the Way, which is world famous. So what he does is he gets ancient wisdom and he applies it to everyday life. The idea that we can't control what happens to us, but we can control how we respond. So we speak about daily routines, resets, the power of being your own referee, doing the most important thing first in your day. And I also put it to him that I think it's a little bit easier in America to reinvent yourself because it's so big and you can almost go off to college and become whoever you want to be. But in Ireland, we all know each other. It's a village. And sometimes taking the leap to reinvent yourself can be very, very scary. And I know I went through that in 2017. And of course, when I did reinvent myself, I was massively supported. But you do have to take that scary leap first. So I put that to him and we have a great chat about that. So I hope you enjoy the podcast. If you enjoy it, please stick it in your WhatsApp groups. I think the men in our lives might like this podcast too. And Ryan is speaking at the Convention Centre here in Dublin on Friday, the 15th of November. I am heading along to that talk. I can't wait for it. So I'll leave a link to his tickets in the show notes. Ryan Holiday, welcome to the Good Glow podcast. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for making time for me today. I mean, you are just so mega and have lots of important things to do. So I really appreciate it.
I don't know about that, but I'm glad to be here.
I wanted to ask you about 10 million, you know, copies of your book sold, like millions and millions of people checking in with you online. Like, what is it about your message that you think is resonating with people so intimately?
Well, I think it's that it's not my message, right? So Stoic philosophy goes back 2,000 years to the 3rd century BC. And it was sort of formed in the crucible of human experience, disasters and shipwrecks and bankruptcies and exile and wars and natural disasters. And so what I write about is this ancient tradition, these insights that men and women not just conceived of thousands of years ago, but have tested over and over and over again. And what I do in my books is take those insights and illustrate them with stories so people can remember them and people have an easy way into them. That's all I really bring to the table.
What is it for anyone? Because I think we all have this idea, or some people have an idea of what Stoicism is, and it's actually not what it is.
Yeah, I think people think it's, you know, keep calm and carry on, the stiff upper lip, has no emotions. And look, there is a part of Stoicism that is trying to be less emotional, but it's not the same thing as emotionlessness. To me, my sort of working definition of Stoic philosophy now for several years has been this idea that it basically says, you know, we don't control what happens, but we control how we respond to what happens. And so it's a philosophy designed to sort of accept the reality of the human condition. And at the same time, it's empowering in the sense that it says, okay, well, what are you going to do about it? Who are you going to be inside of it? What are you going to make of this thing that fell in your lap or this thing that, you know, hit you on your blind side, what are you going to do about it? And so to me, that's what Stoic philosophy is. It's this idea of like, well, a lot of things are not in our control, but there are some really, really important things that are in our control. And most of us neglect those things.
And what it would be an example of them?
Well, our opinions, our thoughts, our actions, the story we tell ourselves, right? So it's like, look, an athlete doesn't control what the refs do. An athlete doesn't control what the other team does. An athlete doesn't control the weather. An athlete doesn't control what the coaches do. It doesn't control what the fans say. But the athlete does control how they play, right? The athlete controls what they bring to the table in that game, in that moment. They control what they do. And so again, we spend a lot of time arguing with the referees, complaining about what happened last week or what we're worried about happening next week. And what we're neglecting is this thing in front of us right now.
Yeah. It's interesting, isn't it, though, that so much in the world has changed, yet the fundamental principles of Stoicism can still be relevant to us in this day and age.
Yeah, if you think about Marcus Aurelius's meditation, so this is the private notes of the Emperor of Rome. And what's craziest about meditations to me is here you have Marcus Aurelius writing to himself. He's not even thinking about an audience at all. And yet you read it and you're like, he's talking to me. I dealt with this. I'll give you an example. This is one of my favorite passages in Meditations. All right, this is book 5 of Marcus Aurelius's Meditations. This is the copy that I got when I was 19 years old. He says, at dawn, when you have trouble getting out of bed, tell yourself, I have to go to work as a human being. He says, or is this what I was created for, to huddle under the blankets and stay warm? And then he says, but it's nicer here. And he says, so you were born to feel nice instead of doing things and experiences them? You know, it goes on. But the point is, here you have the Emperor of Rome arguing with himself the same way that I did this morning, getting my 7-year-old to his first day of second grade. And we had to get up earlier than we have all summer, right? So suddenly I have to get up early. I don't want to get up early. He doesn't want to get up early. And this sort of dialogue with the self of like, well, what am I made for? What are my obligations? Why does this matter? And am I going to be the person who hits snooze, or am I going to be the person who gets up? And yeah, that is as timely and timeless today as it was 20 centuries ago.
What is, without sounding like this is a ridiculous question, but like, what is wrong with us at the moment? Or do you see something that we all have in common that is holding us all back?
Well, I think that's the other interesting thing, is what Marcus Aurelius was talking about 2000 years ago is the same problem that we have today, right? We get distracted very easily. We make excuses very easily. You know, we do the easy thing instead of the hard thing. We're easily rattled. You know, I guess human beings are human beings, and they always have been. And when I go in, when I do talks, like I'm going to do the one in Dublin, or when I spoke 2 days ago to the Naval Academy, what we're trying to do is not like eradicate these impulses, but develop the strength or the muscles to overcome them. So the part of you that says, hey, I want to stay in bed, we can say, look, I understand that, but I'm gonna get up anyway. Or the part of us that's afraid, or the part of us that has, I don't know, a prejudice or a preconceived notion, the part of us that catastrophizes or has anxiety, these sort of very real and timeless sort of quirks of the human mind. What Stoicism is a set of tools, a set of exercises, sometimes just a set of questions that can help us sort of override those parts of our software or not let them, let's say I get angry in the moment, right? I don't think any amount of philosophy is going to prevent you from ever getting angry. But what philosophy can help you do is notice that you're angry, and can ask yourself, hey, is this getting me what I want? Is this who I want to be? Is this making the problem better or making the problem worse? And then you can sort of back yourself down from there. So I think what Stoicism is a set of tools. And yeah, the experience of being the CEO of a big tech company or an elected official or a writer, you know, these roles are not that dissimilar to roles that people had in the ancient world either. A lot of stuff has changed, and then pretty much everything else has remained exactly the same.
Yeah. What do you think we need more of within ourselves?
Well, so Stoicism is built around these four virtues, and that's the series that I've been writing now. And so the four virtues of Stoicism are courage, discipline or temperance, justice, and wisdom. And Stoicism is basically saying that these are the standards that we're supposed to aspire to, that they're supposed to sort of color all the actions that we would take. And I don't know about other people, I don't know about the world, but I would say I need more of those things in my life, right? I am at my best when I'm acting with courage and discipline and justice and wisdom. And different situations call for different amounts of these things. But to me, like it, when I'm trying to come up with what is expected of me in a given situation, it's usually some combination of those four things.
Do you believe in resets? Because I do a September reset every September. And I actually did it in June personally, just myself, because I felt so out of control of all the things that were making me feel well. And, you know, I'd had a baby and things were just all a big muddled mess. And I sat down and I wrote out the things that weren't serving me, the things that I want more of, the things that I want less of. And I have to say, over the last 2 months, I have taken these tiny little steps each day and do feel better.
Yeah. Yeah, these resets are great. I mean, obviously, January 1st is one when we all sort of collectively go, okay, who have I been the last 12 months? Is this who I want to be? Am I going in the right direction? You know, sometimes we do this on vacation, right? We take a summer vacation. And then as we get away from the busyness of our life, we're able to go, hey, like, I feel better. I'm doing more of this. I'm doing less of this. When I get back to my real life, quote unquote, I want to do more of this. And then, of course, the pandemic was a big reset for a lot of people, because suddenly so many parts of our lives we were forced to change, you know, not for 2 weeks, but for much longer than that. And then we were able to, again, see these things from a distance. But I think what's important about what you said is the act of writing it down and sort of having a dialogue with yourself on the page. To me, this is an essential practice of Stoic philosophy. And ultimately, it's what Marcus Aurelius is doing in meditations. He's doing it every day or on a consistent basis, sort of putting himself up for review and going, hey, what am I doing better? Why am I doing this? Do I believe this? Is this true? And so I think an active process of sort of self-talk and self-examination is a really essential philosophical practice. And ideally, you're doing this on a regular basis so you don't drift too far from who you want to be. But sometimes that happens. Life intervenes. You have a kid. You have a crazy period in work. I don't know. You know, your life gets disrupted or blown up in some way. And then you wake up one day and you go, this isn't how I want things to be. I want them to be very different. And I think sort of a hard reset can be a great way to do that too.
Yeah, it is like, and it is about writing things down. And I also think when you're taking something on, I want to become this person, blah, 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 what do you need to let go of? What stories are you telling yourself? And I think in America, so say when you go off to college, you can reinvent yourself. You can, yeah. You know, America where dreams come true. You can be anything you want to be. In Ireland, everyone knows you. It's a village here. So I guess for so many people, they stay the same because their mother told them who they were. Their neighbor yeah. knows who they were last year, last week, last month. There's so many people in their circle reminding them of who they used to be. And therefore, we tend, not speaking for everyone in Ireland, but to keep ourselves small sometimes.
Yeah, there's an observation from Seneca, who's one of the other great Stoics, and he talks about the sadness of how many people, instead of living as they could, he says they live as they have begun. So you find yourself on some path, or you're just doing what your parents taught or what circumstances allowed you to do in that moment, and you're never really stopping to question whether this is the best way to live, whether this is all that you're capable of doing, whether it's making you happy. You know, we have so many assumptions. I think therapy is another place where you have the opportunity and the safe space to sort of talk through some of your assumptions about yourself and about life. And what you realize is that a lot of them are not true. You know, you go, hey, like just a simple one. People go, oh, I'm bad at math, right? And it's like, are you bad at math, or were you bad at math when you were 11 years old? And you've not, and actually what's happened is, you know, you had a bad math teacher, right? I'll see this all the time. people tell me that they'll have read one of my books and they'll go, I hadn't read a book since high school, and then they read one of your books. And almost invariably, what I'll find out is that those people listened to an audiobook. And so these were people who, growing up, maybe they had dyslexia or they had bad eyesight or they just never were introduced to the right books. And so they thought they didn't like books, but really they didn't like reading. Like they didn't like reading physical books. And then what they learned being exposed to a different medium, like an audiobook, is that actually they love what's inside books. Or being introduced to them many years later, reintroduced to it many years later, this is exactly what I need in this moment. And so you have these assumptions that are constraining you. And it's not until you're kind of pushed out of your comfort zone or you take the time to really examine whether those assumptions are true or not that you're able to potentially update or change your life in a significant way. There's so many foods that I thought I didn't like because as a 10-year-old, I tried them and I found them disgusting. And then, I tried them as an adult and it turns out, hey, actually my mom was just not a very good cook. And, yeah. Or that things have changed. I mean, this is a crazy one. Do you remember Brussels sprouts growing up? Like nobody yes. liked Brussels sprouts. And now every restaurant serves Brussels sprouts and they're delicious. Well, part of it is that they cook them better, but also the Brussels sprouts that they grow now are fundamentally different than the Brussels sprouts they grew growing up. They've genetically engineered the crops. They've evolved them over a relatively short period of time that they select them for different traits now. And so they taste better. They're not as bitter as they were when we were kids. And so again, you're growing up and you think you don't like something, or you think you're a person who doesn't like things. And actually, you're just stuck in some childlike state and you haven't re-examined that assumption or experience.
And it's all literally about the seeds that we're planting in our own heads about our ability.
Totally. Yes. Yeah. We have these, invariably these beliefs are limiting in some way, that we're someone who can't do X, Y, or Z. And, the idea that you are fixed, that you can't change or grow is a really sad, constraining assumption. And the more you challenge that, I think the more is going to be possible for you.
Do you have a way in which people can overcome limiting beliefs? Or is it about educating yourself, becoming curious? Like, how can we step out of those boxes?
I really do think asking, like when you have beliefs or have assumptions, just a regular process where you're asking yourself, is this true? Like, do I actually believe this? What evidence do I have for that? That's a really important thing. Then the other thing that I've been doing, I'll give you an example. So I'm on this speaking tour, and normally when I do talks, I have a very specific talk that I do, and it's a talk I've sort of refined over many years and a style that I've done over many years. Usually I have a clicker and there's slides behind you. That's just how I've done it since I started, because that's when I started, that's what the audience has wanted. And that's typically what, when I'm asked to give a talk, they're requesting. And then I'm on this tour where instead of speaking to a corporate event, I'm like, people are buying tickets and they're coming and seeing me, which I realize is, hey, I'm addressing an audience in which the context is slightly different. And so I sort of set out and I said, okay, well, if I was thinking about this from scratch, what kind of talk would I give? How would I do it? And so I just gave the first two of them in Australia about 2 weeks ago. And so I just decided I would redo the whole thing. And look, so first off, by committing to do something that was outside my comfort zone and then deciding, hey, I'm going to do it the hard way. I'm going to do it a new way that I haven't done it before. It's forced me to re-examine a bunch of assumptions. And then as a result, you grow. It's like, look, if you go to the gym and you lift the same weights in the same way every time, yeah, sure, that's good. That keeps you in shape. But you're not really going to be getting stronger because you're not creating additional resistance. And so how do you come up with ways to challenge yourself and get yourself out of your comfort zone? Look, something like a cancer diagnosis is obviously going to shake your whole life apart, and it's going to force you to do that. Life is going to intervene for us in ways like that over the years. But on a smaller level, we can sort of force these changes by making commitments, by agreeing to do things, by sort of leaping into the unknown. That's how we grow and change and discover things about ourselves.
Just a short break to thank Dove Advanced Care Body Wash for supporting the Good Glow this season. It's a big year for Dove. This is their best ever body wash with 24-hour renewing micro moisture. If your self-care needs an upgrade, you can choose to deeply nourish, hydrate, gently scrub or revive with 10 gorgeous variants. And I just can't decide my favorite. It's also free from sulfates, has biodegradable ingredients, and is packaged in recycled plastic bottles. So say goodbye to dry skin this season with thanks to Dove Advanced Care Body Wash. And then you say in your book, Right Thing, Right Now, that we need to become our own referees. And I yes. thought that was so interesting because the only person you need to face at the end of the day is yourself.
Yeah, you have to hold yourself accountable. You have to be the kind of person, because look, most of what we do without, like, look, when you look, if you're someone who has a boss, there's someone who's holding you accountable and pushing you. And then when you start your own business, you work for yourself. There's no one that cares about whether you succeed or not. It's on you. And if you can't be your own boss, your own referee, if you can't hold yourself to standards, you're not going to reach your full potential. And so developing that muscle to say, hey, no one's watching. I can take this shortcut here. I can phone it in today, but I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to allow myself to do it is a really powerful and important skill.
You say also that we should do the most important thing in our day first.
Yeah.
Why should we do that?
We have a finite amount of willpower, I believe. We're at our best for a brief period each day. So are you going to let a bunch of trivial stuff? Are you going to let sort of procrastination or your lower nature creep in and get around to the important stuff later, maybe? Or are you going to tackle it when you're fresh and excited and you have fewer interruptions? So I just kind of think about it as like, when are you at your best? What is the thing that's going to require or take the most out of you? Let's cross that off first. And then if you get anything else done the rest of the day, awesome. But you've already won. You've already done the hard thing, right? Like, I think there's a reason a lot of CEOs or busy people work out in the morning. It's because if you tell yourself, hey, I'll get to it at the end of the day when I free up, the chances of you freeing up are low, right? So you've created an excuse. You've given yourself a way to not have to do it. But if you do it first thing, it's already done. And then if you get extra things done also, then you've had a super successful day, but you've already guaranteed a kind of a minimum success by crossing it off early.
Are you good at, so say you said there you were doing two shows in Australia. When you come off stage, are you like, oh, I did a great job there? That was brilliant.
I never feel like I did an amazing job, and I'm usually, but I also usually feel nothing. I just sort of have left it all out there. So I'm kind of fried and exhausted. And people, they go, oh, can you sign my book? And they're like, my name's Tom. And then I go, okay, how do you spell that? You know, like I can't use my brain at all. I try to think about what is this thing that I'm trying to do? What is it going to take from me? And how do I make sure that I'm bringing my best self to this? As opposed to just kind of, well, I hope it works out, you know?
Yeah, I love that because you said, how can you do your job well when you haven't defined it? And there's so many of us, we go out into the world and we're blindly moving through days and weeks and months. Have we asked ourselves, what are we trying to achieve here?
Yeah, or what's the most important thing? Like, how am I measuring success? Because so often, you know, if we let other people measure that success for us, we're going to say, hey, I'm successful because I'm making the most money or I've sold the most copies or whatever. And that may not be what's actually important to you. You know, you've got to figure out what success is for you.
Yeah, it's so powerful. So when you come to Ireland, then I've seen loads of your talks online. So inspiring. As I said before, we came on air, I bought tickets for my favorite men in my life, my two brothers, and that they're big fans and we're going to go and it's going to be amazing. What can we expect from it?
Yeah, I just did these two in Australia, and that was fun. And I don't want to just do the same thing again. So I'm going to try to come up with something new. I'm always, as I said, I'm trying to push myself out of my comfort zone. But I think what I try to do is give really practical lessons from this ancient philosophy that's meant so much to me, and now is sort of resonated from all people all over the world. I try to go, hey, what are some really important takeaways, stories, lessons, insights? What do I wish I knew earlier, right? And I'll just put together a collection of those, and we'll walk through it. And then what I'm most excited about, what's been the best part of the talks, is the Q&A after, where I get to sort of get really specific with people, where they're like, hey, I'm dealing with this, or I'm dealing with that. And invariably, it turns out that, you know, sort of a lot of people in the room are dealing with the same thing. So I'm just excited. I think I gave my first talk in Ireland maybe 10 or 11 years ago, and I'm going to bring my family. My kids haven't been yet. So we're all going to come out, and I'm really excited.
Oh, that's amazing. I wrote down in my journal actually something that you had written and said. Oh. It said, we are slaves to our vices and devices, to our schedules and poor self-talk. We're reactive. We look at the world through the lens of other people's visions for success, often in things we have no interest in. We are chained down in a prison of our own making, and it's time for us to break out and break free.
Yeah, the Stoics said the greatest empire was command of yourself. So a lot of people are striving to make a lot of money that so they can have what they call financial freedom, or they're striving to be really important in a given field so they can have power and influence. But how many of us have freedom, like, from ourselves, freedom within ourselves? How many of us have power over ourselves? In the reality is, you know, like, this is in charge, right? Or our negative self-talk, or our negative thoughts are in charge, or our fears are in charge, or our urges are in charge, or addictions are in charge. And so when the Stoics talk about freedom, they don't mean like freedom in the legal sense. And when they talk about power, they don't mean power in the literal sense. They mean like, who's in charge of you day to day? Who's in charge of you? And if you're jealous of someone, or you're motivated by something, or you're compelled to do something, then that thing is what's in charge, not you. And so the empire of oneself is really what Stoicism is about, taking control. So Marcus Aurelius is powerful in the sense that he's the emperor. But when you read Meditations, you understand he's powerful in a different way, and that he's having this dialogue with himself, and he's making himself better, and that he's not so much at the whim of his temper or his fears or his ego. And that, to me, is what Stoicism is all about.
That's beautiful. So you're in the convention center the 15th of November, the Stoic Life. It's going to be a beautiful setting. I hope you really enjoy your time in Ireland with your gorgeous family. Before you leave us, Ryan, can you just leave me leave us with one quote or something that we could take with us for the rest of the week?
I'll tell you about something that I've been, I'm probably going to include in the talk, which is many years ago when I went to Ireland, this guy told me, okay, you got to go to this church. I think it's called St. Michael's or St. Mickles or something like this. I forget the exact name. I got to look it up. But he said, look, you go there, there's not going to be anyone there. And you ask him to see the crypt. And he says, they'll take you down to this crypt. And he says, you can touch a mummy. And I said, what are you talking about? He's like, no, I'm not joking. You can go down there, you can touch. And it's true. I went down to the basement of this church, and they take you into this crypt, and you touch the hand of a person who died in the 11th century. And this is actually a Stoic practice, right? It seems morbid and weird and strange. Here's this person who died, but that's us someday, right? The Stoic practice of memento mori, an active meditation on one's mortality, is this really powerful reminder of the finality of life. It doesn't matter how powerful this person was. It doesn't matter how important they were. It doesn't matter anything. They're there, dead, gone forever. And that's going to be us someday. And a reminder that life is very short, and that we have to use our time wisely and to not take it for granted, to me, is one of the most powerful practices in Stoic philosophy. And whenever I think of memento mori, that's one of the things that I think of, because there's not a lot of other places where they let you touch a mummified corpse. So that's my Ireland memory.
I absolutely love this. And the whole time you were talking there, I was like, and I'm Irish, and I've never heard about this mummy. How is this happening? Ryan, thank you so much. Best of luck in Ireland. I hope our paths cross. And
likewise,
thank
I'll
you for
you
your
there.
Time today. Yeah, I'll see
All
you
right.
there. Take care. Huge thank you to Ryan for that. How would I describe that podcast? It was like a shoulder shake. It was like someone coming and helping you look at your life from the outside in. So I got loads of tips from that. Huge, huge thank you to Ryan. He will be in the Convention Centre in November. I will also be in the National Concert Hall on the 1st of December. It's a Sunday Christmas show at 5 p.m. I mean, the perfect time to either have lunch beforehand or dinner afterwards with the girls or with your husband on a little Christmas date night. We're going to have live Christmas music, inspiring talks, a little bit of comedy thrown in, and the show runs for about 90 minutes. So why not come and join us in the National Concert Hall on Sunday, the 1st of December? I'll leave the tickets in the show notes. We did talk about the September reset there. Now, you can start your 14-day reset at any time in September. So you can start today, tomorrow, whenever you want. It's 14 days, 10 minutes a day. And the feedback that we've been getting from people who've started the reset already have said, this is making me think. I'm really having a good look at my life, and the questions are brilliant in the journal. So you can join up through the link in our show notes. And a huge thank you for tuning in today. If there is someone who might like to hear from Ryan, why not send on the podcast? It really helps the podcast grow, and I appreciate the support and the feedback. So I'll see you next week.